Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 290 featuring Mangi Fan and Samantha Anderson, who is Mangi is the visualization director and Samantha is a visualization associate from Shop Architect in NYC. It was really cool to have them on, right, Kristen?
Yeah, they're super duper nice. And there's just be at 20 or Total Chaos this year.
Yes, not only, yes, they were supposed to be at Total Chaos, but they are going to be at 24 Hours of Chaos, yes, which we will talk about shortly. Before we get into it, let's talk a little bit about the podcast. What did you enjoy about this besides the fact that they had some really cool tech that they're doing over at Shop, right?
Yeah, well, like my one thing is I thought Shop Architects, I called them like chameleons. They like adapt very well to all the new technology that's coming out.
Yep.
And they just use every resource that's out there. And they use a lot of various methods of design and development processes from like video game techniques to simple illustrations. So you guys get, they talk a lot about, yeah, just all the different things they're doing. And especially with like remote access with VR technology and stuff like that. So it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was really cool to listen, especially, you know, Sam, obviously, she's actually been working remotely for over a year before all of this COVID stuff. So to her, it wasn't that big a stretch to continue to work from home. But they managed to do some really great stuff with both VR and real-time technology, not just for visualization and for, you know, marketing materials that's traditionally used for ArcViz, but they do it a lot for even just, you know, site construction views and doing all kinds of other stuff that they deal with. So it is a really great to hear them talk about how they adapt to all kinds of visualization technology and what's that doing to how they work. So really great conversation with them. So cool. Yeah. Now, Kristen, we have a big event happening in just a few days after this podcast comes out. So this comes out, I believe this podcast will come out on the 31st, and 2 days later, what's happening?
24 Hours of Chaos.
Yes.
Amazing. All around the world.
It's going to be all around the world. As Kristen mentioned, it's going to be all around the world. It's 10 zones across the globe. We're in zone 5, I think.
Yes.
Is that right?
5.
Right. So 10 zones. It starts in London, and then it goes all around the globe over 24 hours, and we have over 60 speakers talking about all kinds of cool stuff, including Mangi and Sam, who will be on for the New York band, which I believe is zone 3. Yeah, I think
yeah,
it's zone 3.
Yeah, before us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it'll be zone 3 for them, and it'll be really exciting. I will be on zone 5, which is the west coast of the United States, including Vancouver, also including that. But we are one of the only zones that's going to be 4 hours long. So if you want to know where your zone is, just go to chaosgroup.com/24hours. And that is the number 24 and then hours. And you can find all the information there, including all the speakers and everything else. Are you excited about this, Kristen?
I'm actually really excited. It's going to be really fun. And yeah, we kind of met all the speakers again today and did a little walkthrough. It's going to be an amazing 4 hours for us and yeah, the whole event.
and I really want to give a big shout out to our people in Sofia who are going to be up for 24 hours dealing with this and making sure everything gets coordinated. So that's going to be really, really a big feat for them. But I think overall it's going to be a great event and something that I think would really sort of help bring us together, you know? So
yes,
that's a really, really good thing.
And we didn't mention the dates.
Okay.
We just said it was 2 days after, September 2nd
right,
and 3rd.
Mm-hmm. That's right. 2nd
yes,
and 3rd.
Second,
and so
third.
It starts on the 2nd, and then we're going to be the last talk on the 2nd, and then it crosses the date line and goes to New Zealand after us for zone 6. So yeah, it's a big thing. It's a big thing. Anyway, go check it out. chaosgroup.com/24hours. Again, that's the number 24 and then hours. Mm-hmm. And check out all the speakers and definitely love to see you there. And it is going to be a live event and there's going to be, you know, interactive things going on with all the zones. And it's happening right around happy hour for every zone. So around 7 o'clock. It's starting at 7 o'clock for the West Coast for us, for example. So should be pretty cool. Okay, we've got one more event that's happening. What's going on the 10th?
Yeah, so this is just a small event. It's well, not small, but what we just previously talked about, but it's called the
right,
ProCAD Expo. It's the 2020, this is a digital edition, And you can find out about this at chaosgroup.com/events and sign up and find out more info there.
Perfect. Thank you. And then obviously, we still have a couple other things and news and blog posts that are coming out. So you should check those out. Just go to chaosgroup.com for that. I do want to give a shout out to my good friend, Pedro Conti, who did a great music video for Katy Perry. And you guys should check that out. It's Smile, right?
Smile. Yes.
Smile.
Yeah, I tried to sing it, but
it's a really great music video. And he did it with our good friend, Victor Hugo. And the two of them worked together for the first time, which was really cool. And I've done podcasts with both Pedro and with Victor. And you guys should check those out because they're just such wonderful, heartwarming people. And it was great to see them work together finally for that. One more quick thing I want to mention. I know it's been teased about on teased on social media, not teased about, but teased. V-Ray 5 for Cinema 4D. It is coming out. It's going to be coming out very soon. The beta will be. So keep an eye out for that. I know a lot of you guys are interested in V-Ray 5 for C4D. That is coming out very soon. So just make sure to keep an eye out for it on chaosgroup.com, or you can follow us on our social media feed, which is just Chaos Group as well on Facebook or Twitter or whatever you guys follow us. But for the podcast itself, where can people go to follow this podcast, Kristen?
Podcast, you can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast or chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
Perfect. And if you guys have questions or ideas for the podcast, please let us know. Labs@chaosgroup.com is our email. We would love to hear from you. And of course, if you have any feedback on Apple Podcasts, you would love to get that feedback. Just leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, and please make sure and share us with your friends. That being said, please enjoy this amazing podcast with Mengi and Sam from Sharp Architect.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Yay!
Yay! Seth, we are recording. Okay.
That's a thing. You know when you have to add a layer of complexity to things and it just doesn't quite make it.
Were you using this before COVID thing? No.
No, I was very adamant about only doing them in person. And then they were like, well, who knows when you're going to be able to do it in person again. So the reason I wanted to do it in person is because, one, I wanted to control the sound quality. I also like seeing the people, because I feel if you do it over Skype, you just a little disjointed. When this technology came along, it was really cool because it solved a lot of it. One is we actually get to see each other, which is cool. And two, what happens is that each of your sound files are actually saved locally on your computer and then uploaded to the cloud. So I get individual tracks of sound. So it's much better. And it's uncompressed sound too. So it's
interesting.
So even if you're glitching out, like, you know, sometimes over Skype, like your sound quality on your end is still fine.
Oh, nice. Okay.
You know what I mean? So I don't know how I sound to you right now, but that just sort of gives you the idea.
Great. Are we okay?
You're perfect. You're perfect.
Okay.
I just got this thing yesterday, so happy to test it out.
Yeah. Sounds good. Sounds good.
It's going to be a game changer for all my 50 Zoom meetings every week.
Yeah. So how is it working remotely for you guys?
It's been okay. I think so. Like, I think Sam can speak to that a little bit more because she's been doing this, I would say, almost a good part of a year, almost a year at this point.
Really?
Yeah.
I was in LA for the first half of the year. So I had kind of actually moved remote before everyone else had. So I was a little more prepped and ready for it.
Okay.
And no, it's been working well. I am a little bit more on the interactive visualization side these days. So I'm using different programs that don't necessarily require being hooked up to the server. So So on my end, it's been pretty smooth, and I'm on a very small team, and so I'm not in as many meetings as Mingyi is.
Right.
So it's a little different experience, I'm sure, for Mingyi to go and have all these person-to-person meetings like you were speaking about, to be in the room with someone does change when you go to the Zoom call. So yeah, I'm not sure, Mingyi, what your experience was.
I'm on a lot of Zooms and a lot of meetings, and you know, honestly speaking, it's kind of nice because people are much more impromptu. Like, let's just jump on the call, and then you jump on calls way more frequently now, and you solve problems in like 5 minutes of a quick Zoom or whatever. And so that part I kind of like, as opposed to, well, I guess we'll meet you tomorrow at lunch. It's like, you know, let's just go through it now and we're done, you know?
Right.
So I think that's kind of a nice thing too, but let's talk a little bit about, let's give people first an introduction about Shop. Like tell us what Shop is, and then we'll get into what your guys' roles are a little bit, because I think it's a really interesting story. So who wants to go first?
I can go first. I mean, I've been there for about 8 years at this point, so I can give you about 8 years worth of really detailed history. Uh-huh. And I can give you almost 20 years worth of Wikipedia history.
Okay.
so it is, it's a architecture firm based in New York. Mm-hmm. Most of our staff, at least before COVID, was in New York. Mm. I would say we're about like mid-size at this point, so about like 180 people.
Okay.
And it does we do a lot of work in New York, especially in the Manhattan and Brooklyn area, and you know, from all these different scales, from residential all the way to master plans for new residential developments or even for tech campuses. Mm-hmm. And in between, there's quite a bit of experimentation on smaller scale projects. And so I'm just trying to think of some projects that, you know, people out in the West Coast would know. We've done the Barclays Center in Brooklyn.
Right.
So that was a really big one for us. And that's about the same time I started at the office.
Okay.
And so we've done quite a bit of work in, you know, arenas and stadiums. We've done some of the housing projects around that stadium. We've done some luxury residential towers in Manhattan.
Right.
A few which are under construction right now. And then we've also, over the last, I would say, 5 to 6 years, we've been spreading out a little bit more globally. So out in California, we have a smaller office now, mm-hmm. Where Sam was based for most of last year. Uh-huh. And we started working a little bit with Uber, you know, and working on their new headquarters out in San Francisco. We've been looking at projects in LA as well, and also just kind of larger outside of the US. We've been involved with some embassy work with the US government for the last 5 years.
Interesting.
And so it's, you know, it's interesting places too, like places that I think are not necessarily on, you know, the architectural hot list. So like Honduras for one, and then out in Bangkok as another one, the projects that are public. And mm-hmm. also just because I think the market in New York has been shifting. We've been expanding globally as well. So looking at Australia, looking at Botswana, for instance, and just looking at these different markets and how we can both learn from them and also help sort of spread our architectural culture. And so it's kind of, you know, in a way, like a very sort of traditional architecture firm, but mm-hmm. there is a sort of spirit of invention and innovation. And so I think just, and this is a little bit more on introduction of ourselves. Mm-hmm. I came in 2012 to really help start a visualization department at the office.
Okay.
And this was still at a time where I feel like a lot of offices were still outsourcing all their work to some of the larger visualization companies in New York. And, you know, the partners came in, were like, we want to do this in-house. We want to do visualization in-house. We want to do all our fabrication in-house. So all our models were suddenly being built at our local shop. We expanded later to a space out in Brooklyn, which has like CNC cutters and water jets, and you're building full-scale mock-ups basically in-house, which would normally be outsourced to a consultant. And so Sam came in, and Sam was working together with me for a bit on the visualization end, and then we kind of spun off her off to really help found a technology division within the team as well.
Okay, that's very interesting. That because I would have thought, you know, you when I was back in a long time ago, I was at Gensler, and they were doing the you know visualization part, and I was. There was only in-house. There was no out. There was no ArcVis companies. There was just a few, maybe D-Box and a couple other ones that were pretty big. But then slowly, the trend was there's a lot of visualization out there, and everything's getting outsourced. So it's interesting that Shop decided to bring that back into the fold. Why did they decide to do that? What was the thing that caused them to want to go back to doing it in-house?
I think part of it really was just this efficiency that I think you do lack when there is this sort of separation in space and time. So like you're able to make a lot of quick decisions faster. And this is back in like, you know, 2012 technology, like it still takes time to render things. So they were able to see these results a lot faster. And also just to give a little bit more background, Sam and I are both architects by training. So we come really not from necessarily the 3D digital design background, but really from an architecture foundation, you know, 5 years of school, 6 years of school in just pure architecture. And also an architectural career before all of this. And to come into an office like this and to be able to make design decisions with the architects as part of a visualization team, I think was quite key for us, and it was appealing for us. And I think on the flip side, it was appealing for Shop as well, because suddenly you have someone who has more of an aesthetic eye making decisions for them, like, okay, spatially, how is this going to work? Visually, before we even, you know, get to that final marketing rendering level. So I think like what we created in a way was for architecture, a pre-vis department, right? So before this is going out to, before the developers are hiring, you know, D-Box, for instance, to create their final marketing campaign, we've basically vetted all of the design and all the materials, knowing that whatever is going to get built in the future is going to look like this.
Right.
And so it gives them that reassurance. And I think, like, you know, if you ever watch one of the partners present work on Shop, they have this really famous shot where it's like, this is a photo of Barclays and then this is a rendering of Barclays, right? And it's one-to-one. And because we're really working with them, you know, through technical drawings and through material samples to really make sure things are accurate. And I think on the flip side, when we do something and it doesn't look like what they want, we're not going to fake it, you know? We're going to say, okay, let's go back to the drawing board together and let's redesign it until we get to a point where we're both happy with the design.
Yes. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. And that's really kind of the way I wished it had been a little bit on my side. I think there's a lot of, you know, there was a lot of novelty to visualization, and it's nice that the decisions are being made through your choices that you guys are making in the visualization, right? And it's not just a marketing tool, right? That's the thing is really interesting as well. And I just sort of really like that. But so when you spun off, Sam, like where did you come from? What got you interested in doing all of the visualizations part of things?
Right. Well, yeah. So I guess I had some experience working at an architecture firm in Copenhagen, in which I learned a lot of the visualization tools. And then when I went to Shop, Shop is very supportive of kind of thinking outside of the box and research and development and, you know, always making sure that you are growing and learning new things. And I think out of that, I became interested in some of the game engines and some of the real-time rendering. And it sparked my interest, and I just wanted to know more and learn more. And yeah, you know, I've been at Chop probably for 5 years, and I would say for the last three, I've kind of been straddling the two of bringing a little bit of my expertise in the visualization side and applying it to some of the tech, I guess, components of Shop. And now we've kind of officially made this small team of interactive visualization, all people who have come from architecture, but who are very interested in pursuing new technologies and really seeing, okay, how can we change the way we present architecture or design, or, kind of as Mingyi mentioned, like how can we use this as a design tool, not just a marketing tool, and it can be a marketing tool, which is also, a great thing. But yeah, so I've kind of now made the full transition, and I've honestly really enjoyed it. It's unknown territory, but it's kind of amazing how fast all of this technology is changing, and it gives me hope, for the next couple of years. I'm like very excited to see like what this is, what real-time rendering will be like in 5 years.
Well, it is interesting. And I know real time, obviously, real time is a big deal. Obviously, we're focusing on it quite a bit ourselves. But what do you think real time is going to do that's going to give you guys in the architecture field that's going to be different from what you had before?
Right. Well, I think that even with some of the newer programs that are popping up, I mean from like Twinmotion and Unreal that is allowing you to interact with that real-time rendering, I believe it will open up doors for some of the designers working if they start to engage with that technology. I think it's going to open up some doors that they may not normally go through, like such as they're used to producing these still images. Well, what if you can actually use the real-time rendering techniques to understand what you are designing? That may be a little bit far-fetched, but it's something that our team is very interested in, and not only with the real-time rendering stuff, but as well as software development. And how can we, especially in a COVID world, push some of that real-time rendering into be more remote friendly? So my team in particular, this like for the past 6 months, have been really doing software development, developing apps and augmented reality to try to complement some of the initiatives that Shop was doing beforehand. When they made Barclays, they kind of dove into building an app at that time. And so now we're looking at, well, with all the new technology now, how can we push that further? How can we get design outside of these 2D drawings, these construction documents, and take a look at it in a different way and be a little bit more efficient with it?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point of view. I'm wondering, like, how, I mean, do you, when you're interacting with, it's like, okay, here's a new tool, and then you present it to designers, like, here, use the tool, tell me what you think. Is that how, I mean, is that what's going on a lot, or?
I think it's mostly, oh, sorry, Sam. It's more like we want to do this thing, right? And then everybody sort of problem solves together, and I think most of it is interactive, is doing a lot of that work. It's like, so how do we get to that solution, right? I think one example, and this is sort of more of a project, I think, that speaks to it than Barclays did really was in Botswana. We've been working on this new tech hub in Gabon, and I mean, we're so far away, and we have like a field office with maybe two people at it, at a time. And so the interactive viz team in the early days developed this tool in Unreal that was a training tool. So all these panels for the building are eventually going to be installed on site, right? By local construction workers, by local contractors. We are only there at a very limited capacity. So how do we train these people? And so the team really just took the drawings and, turned it into a model and broke it down into parts and then virtually trained people using the headset and using, the control sticks in Unreal to learn almost commit to memory these motions of how we're going to put things together. And so by the time that we're actually going on site and people are actually doing it physically for the first time, they've already done it before.
That's interesting.
So that's, I think that for us is a really important part of how we're developing visualization, not only just for the purpose of the image, but also really as a way to democratize architecture and to understand, have everybody really be more aware of what comes together when these things are built. And so when you get rid of the drawing set, and when you're getting rid of these diagrams and you're really confronted with a 3D model, I think it shortens that understanding, and it makes it easier for people to connect and communicate a lot better.
Yeah. Do you think it affects your design?
I think so. I think you can spot things quicker, or people who, again, might not have a knowledge of a drawing set will be able to visually pick up these things now.
Sure, but do you think it actually influences the design? That's a better way of saying it. Do you think, like, because you have interactive tools and you're able to do things that, you may not have done before, you're now, like, feel more freedom to experiment with different design concepts as you're going along? Do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure it out because I mean, there's obviously like a lot of there's a lot of different ideas that are come out. As I've always thought about, so many tools out there have obviously created and influenced design, right? And my coworker Lon and I always joke, it's like Boulder, Colorado is the city that was designed by SketchUp, and right. And then you look at a lot of buildings and you're like, clearly someone used Grasshopper and created a facade in Grasshopper. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, it's just that you can see the tool through it. Right. And even in visualization, in visual effects, I can see, like, well, yeah, they designed a creature inside a ZBrush. It looks like a ZBrush creature, right? So you can tell the tools that are there. And I'm wondering, what is it, do you think that real-time tools are going to have an influence on the design? Positive or negative, I don't know, but is it going to have a way that, like, because I have this tool, I'm able to do this design process?
I mean, I think that's a fascinating concept. It makes me think of fashion, even of like, yep. There's these eras when you can tell this was how they were making those, or, this was a very trendy thing at that time. It's hard for me to say whether or not, immediately right now, if we're going to look back in 10 years and be like, oh, that's when everyone was getting into real time or augmented reality. Right. I think there will be some phase of that just because technology is shifting so quickly, but I don't know exactly how that will relate to the end design.
Yeah. I mean, it's also libraries, right? If you look at things like, some of these real-time tools, they come with libraries of materials, right? And if you keep using the same libraries of materials, everything's going to look like that same library of material, right?
Right.
So it's that's kind of it does have an influence in some ways. I remember back
Yeah, we're really hoping it's more of, carrying through the idea of the process rather than the actual design aesthetic. So this idea that now, obviously COVID's sped everything up a lot quicker,
sure.
But this idea of being able to work, the real time was being able to work remotely and to also interact in the same model. And we've even, tried a lot of things just to like make our happy hours more engaging than a Zoom meeting, with avatars and like all of that stuff. And so I think we're really hoping that the idea of collaborative work will change in the future. Right.
Right.
And we started off with talking about, the headset, which is really kind of an isolating, solitary experience.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, when we first started doing a lot of VR work, we had headset reviews. And so you had headset reviews for a project. So you had one partner basically in a headset and everybody else watching a TV screen, seeing what he's seeing in the headset, right? And so it is actually really isolating and you don't really get the full experience.
Right.
And so we've been kind of evolving that process. We've started working, for instance, with Igloo. to create like, you know, a 360 space in our office that for one of the partners, he was just like, I want to see everything at once and I want to see it together with you, right? And so you're starting to create these experiences now where it is virtual and you can potentially have different people in different locations, right? So someone who does have a headset can plug into that Igloo system and view it from their home and have almost a similar experience as someone who's standing in that space with 10 other people, right?
Yeah.
And so we're really looking to just to say, like, define how we can transform the collaborative process, the collaborative design process, instead of the actual design.
Yeah. I think that's a fascinating problem, and it's been around. You know, like it was so interesting when VR came along, because it was, everyone had an idea of what it was going to do and everything, but it's now obviously is like, well, VR is dead. And, well, it's not really dead. It's just found a better place. You know, it found what it needed to find, and I think architecture is a huge part of it. But there was a lot of issues, and you're not the only person. I've talked to a lot of architects who've had the same thing, right? Like the headset problem, the isolation problem, the designer who does not want to put on a headset, or, you know, all of these different issues, or the client who doesn't want to put on the headset. That's also even worse, right? You can put all this work and they don't want to put the headset on. And so that's really a disorder. So there are different areas. And I think the Igloo thing is a really interesting thing, because it does feel like you're all in it together. There's another tool that, I don't know if you guys have heard of Visual Vocal. It's actually pretty interesting as well. Visual Vocal, Sam, you've heard of it, have you?
I've heard of it, but I'm not, I don't know much about it.
It's really cool. He's been on my podcast, and he basically created a system that's basically a version of Google Cardboard, but everyone's in the same space at the same time. So as you're looking around, you can see what other people are looking at, and mm-hmm. you can all talk to it. So if you're all in the meeting room together, you can all look around at the same stuff together. And then it's like, I'm over here. And then everyone, you can see what everyone's looking at. And you can even do annotations on there in real time. And it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of brilliant. It's very simple, but I love how people are coming up with solutions about the virtual space that are very different, right? Like, because it is a virtualized space, and yet we're all architects, right? So we're thinking about virtualized space in a very unusual way. And right now you're solving it to actually build real buildings, but you've thinking of, you know, like you said, in this COVID situation, you're trying to situate, it's like, what if we just interact in here? What if we had a happy hour in here? What if we just stayed in the virtual space? And the thing that I think is interesting is that, you know, I've seen the work of Shop. It's great work. It's beautiful architecture, beautiful design. But I'm also wondering, it's like, why bother building it? Why can't you just virtualize the design itself or make interactive virtual spaces? Don't you think architects may have a role to play in these new virtual spaces and in terms of the way that spaces are designed?
Yeah, I definitely believe so. I'm curious, who do you think would be the client on that end? Do you think there's a world that exists where they're like, we want that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think video games companies would pay architects to design beautiful buildings for them.
I mean,
or whatever, you know, and there's lots of spaces out there. I mean, I don't know if you get, I mean, we, again, Lon and I were joking about it. You guys remember the Oculus Netflix app? Do you remember the Netflix app on Oculus? And you put it on, and it was a really ugly piece of architecture living room that looked like a ugly ski lodge, and that's
like all the happy hours all the virtual happy hours we did. Remember, Sam, we did one that was kind of like a virtual ski lodge?
A little bit, yes.
And I was like, I want it to be designed by a really, you know, good designer and like make a beautiful space. And it's like a whole new real estate space, you know, a virtual, and those spaces do exist, you know. I just think that we have a role to play. And what's also interesting is that you guys are not just designing the spaces. I mean, everything you've described, both of you guys have described, has been so interesting. It's like, we designed a way to interact in there in order to achieve a goal, right? So it's not just about the design. It's about how you work in there and how you design, how things function. And I think architects have a role to play there. Obviously, your architecture education and your background has, you guys aren't just visualization people. You're not just trying to make pretty pictures, right?
You want to make pretty buildings that will be pretty in real life and also function.
Right, right.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe, Sam, you can speak to the kind of work we've been doing at 9 to Kolb recently on site. I think that'll be an interesting one to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, in the COVID world, and honestly, we were even, you know, kind of studying this stuff before COVID happened, and now it's been made it even more exciting. But we are looking at having real-time updates for construction. So, And this is, you know, when you asked, is this, we're making this stuff and saying, here, this is. I think at SHOP, we have some really wonderful design colleagues who are interested in this stuff and wanting to know, okay, how can we use this? How can we work together? So we have people on the design team for 9 to Kolb that have, you know, mentioned to us, like, we would love to have this. Can we do this? Is this possible? So there ends up being a lot of back and forth in between the interactive team and the design teams trying to solve these problems that you speak about. So we currently have a system set up to where the CA team can enter when a new floor has been poured. And so Anyone can get on the app and see, you know, how many floors that have been poured. We are also looking at scanning as well. And so the CA team can go on site, scan it, put it onto this app, and then our partners can see it, or, you know, the developer or the client or the contractor.
You mean like a LiDAR scan of it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So basically, like, you can do a site visit without going to the site.
Exactly. Right. It's pretty incredible to see some of the scans coming out so well, and then just being able to see it on the phone quickly is like a very exciting thing. And then of course there's some asset prep, you know, to bring it into the app, but just having that ability, I think, has been really amazing. And I think also, you know, some of the designers at SHOP have just been so amazing, and that they are interested in these things. So I think a lot of these tools are kind of developed naturally in that way of someone saying, we want to do this. Is this possible? Usually the answer is yes, but how do we get there? Especially with three people coming from an architectural background who, you know, don't exactly know everything there is to know about, you know, C# or coding to get what we need, but we are all very, you know, let's put our heads down, figure out this problem, and we'll all get there together. And I think that's how SHOP works a lot. And so it's been exciting to see how we have been evolving since 9 to Kolb started in the design phases years ago, and to now seeing it be built and being able to utilize some of these things.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I think it's a fabulous way to look at it. I love the fact that you can do a virtualized design, you know, construction inspection in a way. I mean, do you find that that's really being effective, or do you still feel like there's people need to go on site at some point?
So right now it has been effective. I don't know if that is simply because not everyone can make it to site. And so it's kind of a like a forced, like, this needs to work. This needs to do the job that it's doing. But I would say that it has been helpful. Like, even with meetings with the partners, they're able to, like, look at the scan and make a comment on it. That just gives a little bit more information than a construction photo might.
Right. Right. I think it's, and you also can probably climb up to areas that are not as easily to access,
exactly.
Accessible, right? So that's really interesting. And the other thing is, obviously, that, I mean, LiDAR has cost a ton of money, but it seems like LiDARs have come down in price. So all of this stuff has become much more accessible for everyone, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And then I think, like, on the reverse side, just to speak a little bit about accessibility, like we talked earlier about this, like, drawing set and, you know, the 100-page drawing set that only, like, select people can read. And so, like, going back to, you know, how this office has been incredibly supportive in these sort of innovations. So one goal very early on a few years ago was, like, how do we get rid of this? right? How do we get rid of this? You guys go and you brainstorm and figure it out. And so to tie in a little bit with that 9 to call project, so in addition to sending information from the site back to the office, we also have the ability to send information from the office to the site, right? So let's say you're standing in this giant hole, the basement, right? Someone on site with a iPhone or just an Android phone can open the app, pull out the floor that they're supposed to be working on, and it'll create a 3D overlay of what it's going to look like. So, right. And then that will be, done from Revit, and that information will be updated live so that they can also double check measurements and making sure they're getting accurate information. So it really becomes about how do we evolve the technology to achieve goals that maybe today are sort of standards in architecture, but in the future are going to be completely obsolete.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think AR has a huge role to play in construction. It's going to be so much easier to basically say, no, it goes right there because I can see it. You know what I mean? So that's right. It's like, as opposed to, I don't know, like the drawing, I guess, I think that's that, you know, like that's, I mean, that's how we build buildings for so long. Now it just seems so interesting that he is like, nope, that's that. The other one thing that I thought was really interesting, and I didn't know about this, is like, there's another company that was working on hospitals, and they created an entire maintenance schedule all in AR for the hospital. Wow. So that basically they can go through and go, okay, you just put on the headset and then you look around. It's like, oh, yep, that pipe needs to be cleaned out every week. And so you can just look at it and you know exactly which pipe it is. You know, it's not like the maintenance schedule is all done in AR based on the Revit data that they already had. So they obviously work with the engineers and everything else. But I was like, well, of course, and you think about how much less training you have to do. You just say, no, that one right there, you know, it's just like, and so I think it's really, there's so much to be done in terms of what you're talking about, interactivity of showing people, like just showing people how to do it in real time as well. And you mentioned, you basically train people how to put it together by practicing in a video game, right?
Basically.
So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, what do you think about the idea that these, video game companies are creating these tools that you guys are using that are not a game necessarily?
I love it. I think we want to learn from different industries all the time. And, sure. There's not a lot of cross-pollination, and this kind of new gaming engine and the cross-pollination that exists within even the gaming, like there's so many different industries using it now. We are learning so much from it. So, even like in the game workflow, like if someone is building tools just for the engineers to match up with the artists or something, that's not something that necessarily exists in architecture, but now we are starting to explore some of those things. So having someone who's just going to build us a script so that this process is a little bit quicker. So the interactive team is really kind of rethinking some of our workflows, kind of based off of some of the things that we have learned from some of the gaming engines or other industries that we've seen. So I think it's been very exciting for us to kind of broaden our scope and our outreach and really learn from these different industries. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I agree. I mean, it's not just architecture. You have, the movie industry obviously drawing from the same sources right now. And I do think it is very much part of like the shop DNA to like pull from other industries, especially with 3D technology. You know, there has been innovations over the years that we are only now starting to catch up with, right? So real-time graphics, gaming done ages ago, right? And we're only at that point now. And I think it's exciting to now start to move in alignment together and see what we can produce then. And so like even for buildings, I think very early on, the partners didn't necessarily look to other architecture or other architects for construction methods. They looked at cars. They looked at planes, right? So Frank Gehry also did the same, where it's like, let's use CATIA. Let's see how other industries are making things more efficient. And can we learn from those industries and then make efficient buildings that way, right? Can we start taking out some of those weaknesses? And can we utilize it in a way that might be very unique to our industry and develop from there?
Right. Absolutely. But I also think what's fascinating is that you guys seem to have embraced the real-time engines as a platform more than something to visualize. Like, you actually use it as a way to do interactive things, right? So it's really about being a much more of a tool instead of just a real-time renderer of any kind. It doesn't seem like the rendering is important to you guys when you're talking about these tools, as opposed to the abilities that it gives you to communicate or to train or to do other things. Does that sound about right?
Totally. I mean, clients, Sam can speak to this as well, but clients have been very happy to have control over things, not just the office, you know, for a client to be able to just like get in there and actually view things on their own and make decisions on their own.
Right.
It gives them a feeling of being part of that design team. And I think it enriches the overall experience of working together with clients.
Yeah.
And I think they're not looking for the kind of high end rendering side of things. I think for them, it's just being able to be in that space. And like you said, like, we're more interested in the tools than, obviously, like, we're both interested in the rendering aspect of it. But as far as our role at the firm and, you know, why we chose Shop and this, you know, kind of pushing the boundaries, the end visual quality is not going to be our highest, benchmark. Like, we are, of course, interested in that and always learning and exploring that. But we are more interested in how is this going to help people in some way.
Yeah, I completely get it. I think there's a couple things that I want to ask, and because, I mean, these come up all the time, right? There was always like, when you're doing a rendering, when back in the day when I was doing a rendering for, some lobby area, desk, a reception desk. I did a lot of reception desks in my time. So you're doing that, but they always wanted you to frame the camera to only look at what they wanted you to look at, right? And now you're basically saying, no, go ahead, walk around, I don't care, So because they didn't the reason they didn't design the stuff behind me, or they haven't thought it out, they just wanted people to focus on looking at what they wanted to look at. So the renderings were always placed in that direction. So now that you're giving them the freedom to just look around and play in their space, how does that affect the choices you make in terms of what's designed or how designed things are, or those types of decisions?
I think it forces the designers to have a little bit more accountability for what's right. being shown. I mean, oftentimes also our teams come in and they're like, okay, make something that looks good. So you still have that, right? So we still make things that look good. But it does make, I think, everybody just more aware of the choices that are being made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's a good thing. I don't think that's a bad thing. It's so funny because there's so many times that I've heard, like, we don't want to make it look completely real because then they think that we've already made the decisions on the design thing. And I was talking to Patrick Schumacher, actually. He's been on my podcast, and he was saying, like, no, I think it should be 100% photoreal from the beginning, because then we're accountable for everything we've made.
So on the flip side, we do have all of this really
That's aggressive. Yeah, I know.
But we do also, we have an amazing illustrator in house, Mariano. Mm-hmm. He does hand sketches, and they're not sketches, they're illustrations, and they're really right. detailed, but they have that level of, the sort of ambiguity where it's like, it's detailed, but it's not telling you all the information.
Okay.
Yeah. So we also employ that, so you do have the really old school as well. So it mm-hmm. kind of is like, okay, we have a new project, right? We have a new proposal. Which tool from our kit of parts do we want to use for this particular project, right? If right. it's more about construction, interactive viz team, come on, we can do something. If it's right. something like, let's just like move their hearts, then, we bring in the illustrations and we create something based on that. So you're not giving everything away in a right. way, I guess.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear. In fact, you have to make that decision. Like, how do we want to present this? Do we want to present it in this more dramatic way that's a little more ambiguous? Then another one was like, check out all the cool stuff that is going to be involved in your space. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you have different ways of expressing the design in that way. Do you think that the interactive stuff will or can have the same emotional response that you're trying to get from the illustrations that you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, I think it's possible, especially because there's not really like an aesthetic that is standard for some of the software platforms that we are developing. I think there's some room to grow in that way, and that we can kind of make this look however we want to at the moment. Like there's not, specifically with some of the apps we're doing, of course there's UI design, but you know, what if one day we wanted to incorporate some of the illustrations that Mariana is doing? Like we can definitely do that. And you know, we've, you know, wanted to do stuff like that. And I think that because there's not this rigid, a rendering needs to kind of have this quality and they all kind of need to like look similar and, you know, or like if you go on, yeah, sorry, I'm not sure where I was going with that, but I do think there is a possibility for us to explore the kind of heartfelt route. I honestly haven't really thought about it too much, but I definitely think there's a way that we could kind of combine some of the illustrative, beautiful things that Mariano has done with some of this newer technology.
Yeah, I think we're lucky enough that we're still, it's the technology, at least in architecture, is still relatively new, right? There are no sort of frameworks for, you know, as opposed to like a photorealistic interior luxury design rendering. There's always that, right? There's no prescriptions for any of these things. So I think it's actually very freeing at the moment, and it lets us kind of develop our own language.
Yeah. And there are so many rules to architectural illustration that people don't realize, you know what I mean? Like how things are composed, the fact that you still want all your verticals straight or blah, 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 blah. And so many ways that things, you know, are traditionally done. And that's what I mean, like traditionally done. And that just right there implies the fact that it has so much history. There are no such rules in what you guys are doing. They try to put rules inside of VR saying you can't do this, you can't do this because it'll make people sick or whatever, right? And it turns out a lot of those things were not actually true. They just arbitrarily put in there. I'm really curious what you think, like, you know, if there's going to start to be interactive rules or things that people are going to know about that they're going to sort of adapt over time.
Yeah, I'm curious about that as well, because even, you know, internally when we're working, we're trying to figure out, you know, what type of Zoom are we using? Are we doing Dolly Zoom? Or, you know, what are we going to fix the verticals? You know, right. Is that important for this? So I think internally we are, you know, starting to kind of figure out within our apps of like consistency of like, you know, let's kind of stick to a few of these things. I'm not sure if it's going to be like a globally thing, but I do, you know, you go to conferences where they do talk about like, oh, here are the tips so that no one gets sick and some of those things. I can't imagine that right now happening, but it is interesting that you say that because I guess we are kind of internally making some of those decisions. It will be interesting to see if that, you know, becomes a thing for the industry. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what's also interesting, and this is something you guys are touching on as well, is that we're in an age now where every interface that you touch has to be completely intuitive, right? I mean, we were joking, as like when I had got video games a long time ago, they used to come with manuals of how to play the video game, yeah. Right? Yeah. And now it's like you just play, right? When you get your phone, there's no manual that comes with a phone. It turns itself on and it teaches you how to use it as you go, right? And so there's a new lesson of how to interact with spaces that just naturally becomes intuitive. That is something it sounds like you guys are having to do as well. Like you have to just give your customers or, you know, the client is, you know, like, here's an interactive space. Just walk around, and it feels natural. How is that sort of process?
Well, so we have been doing user testing with a lot of shoppers and a few clients. So we sit down with them, we do a lightly moderated user testing, and it's been very fascinating to kind of see their reactions and understand like what's intuitive to them, what is not. And like I said, none of us, you know, have UX backgrounds. So we're kind of learning as we're going. But I think the kind of wonderful thing that has come out of it has been how accessible it has made our projects to people. So you don't have to know how to read construction documents or, you know, orbit through Rhino. You're able to open up an app and kind of see these things. And even talking to other colleagues, they're like, wow, I could show my parents this and they'll understand what Shop is about and like understand some of the sizes. And, you know, if they don't live in New York where they can see some of these projects. So I think it's helped in that way. And it's been very interesting seeing it evolve, which is a little bit a step in a different direction than some of the virtual headsets. Because there you do kind of, you know, you put the headset on someone, you kind of need to like, you know, voice to them what they should be doing. Right. Whereas with some of the more software development, it is, you know, part of the problem solving to figure out what's going to be the most intuitive thing to do.
Right. Well, yeah. Yeah. And I honestly think, you know, like you said, you're not UX people, but architects are UX people, believe it or not, because they design buildings and they have to be usable. Right.
Right. Yeah, you're
right?
Totally right.
So you that is exactly what you do. You are, you know, it's a whole body UX that you have to design. And if you messed up and you didn't put the cupboard in the right place and like, look at this, who designed this? That's so you are absolutely designers. And I think you definitely have a great role to play here. And I think it's great. I think it's really cool that you guys are being doing this stuff. And I really, really, really think that architects are going to have a much bigger role than designing buildings in the world. You know, there's talk about the metaverse, et cetera. And that, I think, is a role that architects should embrace and should be involved with. And I would love if there is good design in the virtual space, as opposed
we
to.
We would love to do that. I feel like so that fun. Is a dream project for our teams and the partners. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, imagine like a amazing. Really amazing, you know, game where all the buildings are designed by architects and they're freed from worrying about the construction. They can really just let their design to sing through, you know. So I think it'd be really great to see that. And so that's been a dream of mine, is to see architects get involved in a virtualized space. And the fact that you guys are already doing so much in the virtualized space, it's just like one more thing. It's like, in fact, all you really need to do is just not build a building and you're done.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
So yeah, I think it's really great. I think it's really cool. Now, before we go, okay, so you've talked about how you're doing and you've mentioned a lot of the unknowns of, you know, how from here, but what do you think, what do you anticipate the future of this technology or where you're going? How do you see, what do you see the next level, the next point after this?
Thinking.
It's a hard question.
Yeah. I mean, I think you know, step by step, we really do want to get to this goal of making architecture, at least the architecture process, really accessible, you know,
okay,
to the point where like someone's mom can just pick it up. And, you know, it starts really with just kind of understanding what each form of technology allows us to access. So like, what are the pros and cons of the headset versus what we've been doing, I think, more frequently, especially with the interactive viz team, where we're developing more for mobile, right? And, you know, the idea of having everybody has their phone on them at all times. And
right.
How can you now start, like, communicating ideas with the phone so that way it's never about being on the Zoom meeting? You can be at a space anytime and you can send those ideas virtually through the phone, right?
Right.
So, like, understanding the impact of that. And then going and evaluating, okay, what can we do with that to sort of get to that next point of democratic architecture, as I like to call it.
Yeah. So it sounds like to you guys are really focusing on the interactivity in terms of the communication part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be the things that's the most important part of everything. Yeah, that's fascinating. Fascinating. I'm very interested. So let's talk a little bit about some of the cool stuff. Is there anything that people can see that you guys have done? Is it out there that people can check out in terms of get an idea of what this is like?
So currently, some of the software development is only beta for the clients and other colleagues at the moment. I'm trying to think if, I mean, we've had some of our colleagues participate in a lot of great talks and are kind of like presenting some of this work. So, Adam Chernick, Chris Morse, Jeff Bell, John Cerrone. They have all been kind of showcasing some of this stuff on a lot of the conferences or even like virtual conferences lately. We currently don't have anything public on the App Store, and there's a lot of like security and liability things that
Of
we're
course.
also problem solving at the moment. But I mean, once the office opens up back up, we have this tech cave or tranquility, as we call it. And I think once we're able to kind of utilize that space, we'll be able to share it with other people. I think it opened up right as COVID happened. But yeah, me, is there anything I'm missing that
No, I mean,
I'm
I'd love to know more, like what if, if there's some videos to showcase what the
Oh yeah,
technology is or
we have
something.
some videos. I can just to go through a few like cool things that we didn't get a
Yeah,
chance to talk
that'd be
about.
great because I know you guys were supposed to be, you guys were supposed to come
We
to Bulgaria,
were,
right?
yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I'm hearing. I was like, can I see something? Because I missed your presentation.
We will be
Yeah.
happy to share a reel with you after this as well.
That's great. And we'll
We've
put it on the show note, we'll put it on the podcast page as well so people
Cool,
can check it
cool.
out. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Okay, so we do buildings, but
Yep.
we worked on an aircraft carrier, which was pretty
Nice.
cool. So we have some pretty cool scans and a lot of the LiDAR stuff for that. We did do a shop retrospective in Site Santa Fe a few years back, so a lot of that content is also online. It was a retrospective, but we were also like designing their new addition, so like people who were there could like put on like headsets and kind of walk around like the new part of the museum. So
Sure.
that's completely public. And then we've also now, just to go along with this idea of visualization as a process, as a design tool, Adam from the team has been working on a lot of population simulators. So for
Right.
instance, if you have an office floor, or you have like a larger campus for something, how can we start controlling points of access and also timing, entry times, and then visualizing all of that in real time? So like you're sitting at a
Interesting.
desk, you can choose any desk in this space, and you can see how many people are flowing around you like throughout the time, different times in the day. And then, so like for instance, from that experiment, then we're like, okay, now we need to put up a visual barrier here, and we need to put a tree here so we can start blocking off those visual access points. And
Interesting.
also just outside of the office, the team does a lot of hackathons and also other experiments. So there's been visualization of sound, things like this as well that we are more than happy to share with you.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to see some of that stuff, and we can definitely put it up on our site. So it'd be really good to see this because I think it's really interesting that, like I said, of all these things. And the other thing that I think is fascinating is you talking about how accessible you're trying to make it to everyone, right? It's very hard to read construction drawings.
I know. We always show like the
So.
one with like everything overlaid on top of, because you have like the architectural, and then you have mechanical, and then engineering, and then
Yes.
the lighting and the all the fire stuff, and it's just like it's just this like dense grid, and like how can we start peeling that all apart? Because I can't read
Yeah.
all of that, so and that's
Yeah,
why I'm in
yeah.
visualization.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate you guys coming on. And sorry that obviously we couldn't get together in Sofia to do Total Chaos, but I'm glad you guys could come on to the podcast and we could talk a little bit about what's going on and share some of your stories and some of the cool stuff you guys are doing. So really appreciate this being
Yeah.
possible.
Thank you so
Yeah,
much
thank
as
you for
well.
having us.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank
Talk
you.
soon.